For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, quick review just to get ourselves back in the mode of where we are up to. We are now starting the final episode of the Yaakov and Esav controversy, if you will, those holding in the great controversy classes. So what we've gotten up to is this last episode, the third time the Torah discusses it, is when Yaakov is returning home again from his uncle Lavan. This last episode is divided up into two parts. First, as Yaakov prepares for the meeting, and that we've been covering over the last number of weeks and months, in which he sends messages to Esav, he sends a gift to Esav, he davens for himself, he prepares for war, and then he has the battle with the angel. All of that is in preparation for his meeting with Esav. That we concluded with all of our commentaries that we wanted to see, and now we've begun the second part of that story, which is, sorry, just as you're seeing, I don't know if everybody should know that you got home at 4:30 last week. We were making fun of you as you left. We were like, oh, a little bit of snow, I can't believe she's leaving early.
I told the story, I said, yes, I had to, okay. Class, a couple of northerners do
it. All right, so I see your face and I have to stop and just recognize, okay, we apologize, we should not have been making fun of you. Okay. If you want to leave now, because I hear there's rain in the forecast, that's okay. In any case, so now we begin our final episode, and that is which now Yaakov and Esav actually meet. This is now in which we're going to have, after all of these years, and all of the stories that we've been learning from their birth, to the selling of the birthright, to the stealing of the blessings, to the preparation, here we actually now have the meeting between Yaakov and between Esav. What we did last week is we just ran through quickly the actual verses, so that we raised a whole bunch of questions, as we like to do, and then we forget them, so that when we learn through them, you know, whatever we remember, we know, whatever we don't, we don't. But the basic story, again, just to take 1 minute, just to get us into the flow of where things are, if you want to follow it inside, it's in the pink sheets in the back half, because that's where this story begins, chapter 33. Yaakov sees Esav coming with his 400 men, he divides up his camp, Leah and Rachel and the two maidservants, each one of the women get the children together with them, places them in their order, Leah and the children, and then Rachel and her Yosef last. He goes ahead, prostrates himself 7 times as he comes close to his brother. Esav greets him, and simple meaning of the text seems to be a loving type of greeting. He runs towards him, he embraces him, he falls on his neck and kisses him, and the two of them weep together. That's the actual meeting. Esav then asks, who are all of these to you? Yaakov tells him, this is my family, these are the children that God has favored me with. The children and the mothers come forward and prostrate themselves before Esav, and Esav says, all of these gifts that you've sent me, these hundreds and hundreds of animals, I don't need them, even though you've sent them to find favor with me, I have plenty. Keep them, Esav says to Yaakov, and Yaakov says, no, if I found favor in your eyes, I want you to have them. And he says that very strange language, which we'll have to take a look at. Seeing your face is like seeing the face of an angel, and you have accepted me. We'll have to take a look at that, of course, when we do this more in depth. He begs Esav to take it, and Esav does. Esav accepts the gifts, and then we have a second dialogue in which Esav says, okay, fine, let's walk together. Let's continue our journey through history side by side, two brothers. And Yaakov says, you know, Esav, I have these young children, I have these tender flock, you're a big strong man, you got these 400 soldiers, you're going to want to go at a faster pace, I can't handle it, I'm going to push my flock too hard, they're going to die, you go on up ahead. Esav says, I'll send 1 or 2 men with you, nah, really, please don't, just go on up ahead. And that's what happens. Esav goes forward, Yaakov stays behind and says, I'll meet you on Mount Seir at some other later time. And then Yaakov, the last couple of verses, gets to the place called Sukkot. He builds huts for his animals, he builds homes for himself, and then he continues on to the city of Shechem. We raise a whole number of questions on all of that, but that's our basic storyline for part 2 of our episode, in which they actually meet. We have, so really there are two parts to part two. There's the meeting and the bowing and the dialogue about the gifts. And then there's a second dialogue about, can I travel with you? And I've, as we've said throughout, the sages see within these verses, within this episode, really the path of Jewish exile. The way that we're going to deal with our adversaries, together with the exile of Edom, which is represented by Esav and Western civilization. And in this dialogue, this come, let's walk together, let's walk side by side, and Yaakov, no, you go on up ahead, I'll catch up to you later. We're going to see much meaning in that. Alright, so far so good? Let us proceed. So what we're going to do is our usual process. We're going to go through Rashi, and then we'll take a look, Mirtz Hashem, at Ramban, and then we'll take a look at the writings of Rav Hirsch, and then, if we still have our wits about us, maybe we'll take all this all together and take a look at maybe some of the statements that the sages and some of the later commentators have said about this as well. All right, but let us get started. So Rashi, as we've grown accustomed, is on our white sheets, as opposed to the Ramban are on our blue sheets and Rav Hirsch in our yellow sheets. So we're going to switch now to our white sheets. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the white and the pink sheets, those two, you have to really be color coordinated. If you're colorblind in this classroom, it's not going to work for you. You really got to know what's going on.
One of the colors that colorblind people could see.
Oh, excellent. Good. What about blue and yellow?
I don't know.
I have a son who's colorblind, and red and green, he can't. He has no idea. Right. Cannot tell the difference between red and green.
75% of men are colorblind.
Is it that high?
Yeah, females, then.
75?
That works in men's part. That's why I knew that.
Is that why we dress so poorly? That would explain why we can't match when we dress.
It's very easy.
What's that?
Do
you like this one? Thank you. Thank you. Okay, yeah, so, I certainly have one of those. Okay, let us begin. So we're going to start, let's read the verse inside, and then we'll read the Rashi inside. So verse 1, Yaakov, Aisa, Yaakov, Einov. I'm on the left-hand side of the page. I'm on page 373. Just so we should all be on the right spot, left-hand side of the page. Sorry, I know it's a little bit confusing. I apologize. Verse 1, everybody see where I am? I'll right over here.
Right.
Yeah. Ramad Gimel, yeah. This is like an SAT test. If you can't follow where I am, you cannot get into high school.
Oh, shucks.
And certainly not college.
We're a little past that, too.
Yeah, I know. You guys are lucky that you're not actually grading you on this. Okay.
Wait, you have the demerits of being late.
That's
so
right.
We're ahead of the
Okay, Vayisa Yaakov Einov. And Yaakov raised up his eyes, Vayar, and he saw Vihine Esav Ba, and Esav was coming, Vimo Arba Meos Ish, and with him was 400 men. Vayichatz. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two handmaids. Interestingly, Rashi does not comment on this. We'll see if some of the others do. Rashi does not comment. We were bothered by the idea that it sounds like now he's dividing up his camp to the wives and to the maidservants, and it seems like he already had previously divided up his camp already in the first half of the story, but Rashi is not bothered by any of this. It's as if the verse is almost, again, Rashi doesn't say this, but I would almost suggest, it's as if getting us back into the story, because we've had a long break from the story in which Yaakov wrestles with the angel, he's renamed, he is healed, the sun shines on him, we have a law that's taught that we're not allowed to eat from the sinew because of the wrestling match of Yaakov, and so it's as if the Torah is now bringing us back. He lifts up his eyes and he sees the 400 and he splits up his camp, but Rashi does not have any thing to say about that. Verse 2, Vayosem es ha-shvachos yosial dehen rishona. He put the handmaids and their children first. Yes, Leah v'iladeha acharonim, and then Leah and her children later. Yes, Rachel v'yes Yosef acharonim, and then behind them, Rachel and Yosef are last. Rashi makes a simple comment here on the bottom of the page in verse 2. Leah and her children next. The further back, the more dear to Yaakov. Rashi quotes in the Hebrew is a very famous phrase, acharon, acharon, chaviv. The last one is the most dear, which is often used in a colloquial sense. Even though I gave you the last lollipops, you feel bad that you were the last one. So I'll borrow this phrase and say, no, just the opposite. You thought you were the last one and you were the least liked. Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. The last one is saved. The most dear is saved for last. And the context here, of course, makes a lot more sense. Because we're preparing for a battle. So the most dear is the one who goes into the back and is protected. And it's become a phrase that's oft used in Hebrew. One of the brilliant elements of Rashi is that the phrases that he uses and that he has made as part of his commentary have literally become part of the vernacular of the Jewish people. The English phrase, for example, you know, well, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China? So our phrases, they come from different places. So in the Hebrew language, those types of phrases often come from Rashi. Achron, Achron Chaviv, which is just a way that people will talk. You know, if you've ever heard of someone give a bar mitzvah speech, and so they're thinking, this one, that one, and the other. And the last one they say, and Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv, the last thank you I make for the most dear. And they thank whatever. They thank their spouse, they thank their son, they thank whoever, their teacher, whoever it may be. And that comes from this idea that Yaakov protected his wife Rachel, who we know was his beloved wife, and her son Yosef. And they were placed
last.
Why did
you say her son, not their son?
Their son. I don't know, sorry. Their son. She carried him for 9 months. I thought I would give her more credit. I've learned a thing or two. That's about it. She did all the work, so I'll give her credit. Yeah. Okay, verse 3. V'hu avar lifneihem, and then Yaakov went on ahead of them. V'yishtachu artza sheva po'amim ad gishto ad achiv. Yaakov then goes on ahead of them, and he bows earthward 7 times until he reached his brother. Rashi comments, well, he went ahead of them on the bottom of the page. Rashi says, he said to himself, Yaakov, Im yavo osa rosh, if that evil one will come lehilachem to do battle, yilachem bi tchila, let him do battle with me first. So that while he's setting up his camp, and he puts the maidservants and their children in the land, and then in the very back is Rachel and her children, but who then goes out to the front? Yaakov himself then passes in front of all of them and stands before them to say, again, I don't know what Esav here wants and how he's going to react. All he knows is that when he sent messages to Esav in the beginning with, I'm coming home, the response to that was Esav comes out with 400 men, and it seems like he's ready and preparing to do battle. So Yaakov says, I don't know what he wants, but if it's battle that he wants, he's going to have to go through me before he gets through his family. This is also the general military plan of the Jewish nation has always been that the leader has been out in front, not standing in the back watching, but has been out there in front, which is why we've suffered many casualties to our leaders. But that's how you lead an army into war, and as Yaakov already teaches us here, from the very beginning. What is Esav's response? Let's continue. Verse 4, reading in the verse up top, Vayorat Esav likraso, vayichabkeu, vayipol al savarov, vayishakeu, vayivku. As we've seen, Esav runs towards him, he embraced him, fell upon his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Now you will notice the dots on the word vayishakeu, on the Hebrew word, and he kissed him, is dotted. So the sages say, whenever you find that the Mesorah, the tradition, teaches to dot certain words, there's a message, there's something to be expounded upon on that word, and that's the Mesorah. Rashi's going to quote, there were two schools of thought amongst the sages as to how to interpret the kiss of Esav. The Torah wants us to know something about it, because on the word that Esav kissed Yaakov, puts dots on top of that word. To say there was something unique or something special about this kiss that you need to know, and that's one of the many ways that the Torah has hidden levels of meaning in the way that it writes in the actual Sefer Torah. One of them are these dots. So the sages argued, what was the unique element about this kiss that is hinted at? And Rashi quotes the two approaches. Vayichabkehu, let's start from the top of the Rashi. He embraced him. Esav's mercy tumbled forth when he saw Yaakov bowing all of these bows. So that there was a level of mercy that was aroused. That here Yaakov is coming with his big entourage. He's already sent hundreds of animals in front of him to greet Esav. And now as he approaches, Esav is seeing that Yaakov approaches bowing at each step of the way. As he comes close, he bows down. And then he kisses him. So the embrace, Rashi says, that hug was because his mercy was aroused. And then he kisses him. There are dots on this word, Rashi notes. V'yesh cholkin b'davar hazeh. And there are those who disagree about this matter. There's a dispute in the Medrash how to interpret the dots. On the one side, says Rashi, yesh darshu, there are those who expound this dotting as to say, sheloy nishako b'chol libo, that he did not kiss him with all of his heart. That if you read the verse straight, we would say, is the verse expressing a positive sentiment from Esav, a negative? How would we interpret it? So what's a simple reading of the verse? Is it very positive? He runs towards him, he greets him, he hugs him, he kisses him, they cry. So there were those amongst the sages who say, that's why the dots are there, to point out to you, there was a certain level of mercy that was aroused within him. But don't be fooled into reading the verse as if it was a full-fledged, heartfelt kiss. It was not. The dots are there to tell you there was an element of distrust, or it's the lingering hatred, anger from all of the previous episodes. That's one approach of the sages, that the dots are to tell you, don't read the verse as if it seems it was with full vigor and love. It was missing something. Continues Rashi. There's another opinion, that of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who says, halachahi, it's a halacha, it's a given fact, it's a known entity, that Esav sone Yaakov, that Esav hates Yaakov. There's a very important statement from the sages as well. Halachahi. That's the rule. The rule is Esav hates Yaakov. Ella, shenichmeru rachamov, his mercy was warmed, aroused at that time, and he kissed him with all of his heart. Meaning to say as follows, the dots tell you there was something unusual about the kiss. The question is, in what context is it considered unusual? The first approach of the sages is, in the context of the verse, which makes it seem heartfelt, the Torah is giving you the dots to tell you it really wasn't. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's approach is a different one, that says, in the context of Esav's usual life, in his usual interaction with Yaakov, which is one of distrust, dislike, in that context, the dots are to tell you this kiss was different. And this kiss was actually a real, heartfelt, I missed my brother, my mercy has been aroused, and I see him now for the first time in who knows how many years, and it was a heartfelt kiss. So there are two approaches in the sages how to interpret the message that the Torah is trying to give us about Esav's kiss. Is it that it's out of the ordinary from the context makes it seem for real, and the Torah is telling you it wasn't really heartfelt, or it's out of context of Esav's normal functioning? Normally Esav does not like Yaakov, and this kiss went against the grain, and this was actually a real bona fide kiss. Yeah.
You're saying, like, he missed him, but why would he miss him? They never got along, you know, just because, you know, they hugged once and everything is, you know, all kosher again?
Yeah, so you're taking the first approach of the sages, right, that it looked from the reading of the verse that it was heartfelt, but really it wasn't. That's fine, there's two approaches.
Okay.
That's been our experience.
That's right. And it's all part of what we've said many times. You know, the Torah is complex. Torah, which is a reflection of God Himself, is by definition, and it's funny, it's complex and it's simple at the same time. The most complex things are sometimes the most simple, but from our perspective, it's very complex. So which is why there are so many different understandings, layers, and levels of meanings, because it is complex. Okay, so what Rashi does not address is a comment that we made, which I hope we'll have a chance to address, that when is the first verb attributed to Yaakov in this verse? In verse 4, there are many verbs. He ran, embraced, fell, kissed, wept. What's the first verb that's attributed to Yaakov?
They wept.
And they wept. Everything is an Esav-centered verb. Esav ran towards him. He embraced him. He fell upon his neck. He kissed him. All of those are singular. The first plural word is, and they kissed.
They wept.
Excuse me, they wept. They wept together. So, without knowing anything, which I know very little, I would suggest, why does Yaakov first have any verb action affiliated here. So if you went with the interpretation that it was a real bona fide cry, or hug, or kiss, if you go with that interpretation, so then it would certainly make sense that it's only after Yaakov sees that his brother is engaged in real bona fide emotion, connection after all these years, that would certainly explain why Yaakov first responds and cries then, after seeing all of that. If you go with the other interpretation of the sages, that Esav's cry, Esav's kiss, was less than heartfelt, then we'd still have to figure out why does Yaakov only cry after being kissed and not before. We can come up with something. Maybe he was crying over the fact that he still couldn't fully win the favor of his brother. I don't know. But it is of note, and Rashi does not address it, why it is that Yaakov first engages this after all of that process. He bows. Esav runs, hugs, kisses, and then they both cry together. Verse, hey, let's move on in Rashi's interpretation. He raised his eyes, Vayikso Aseinah, Vayares HaNashim Yetayiladim. Esau sees all of these women and all of these children. Vayomer Mi'eilelach, who are these to you? Vayomer HaYiladim Asher Chanan Elokim Esavdecha. These are the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Rashi comments in verse 5, who are these to you? Who are they to be yours? Meaning, how are they yours? Like, what's the relationship? Are these all your servants? Are these your children? Are these your family? Who are all these people? To which Yaakov responds, these are actually my children. These are not my servants. These are not people I picked up along the way. These are all of the children. If you remember when Yaakov left Esav some 20 years prior, he left as a single man. He was still living in his mother's house. He was studying with his father. And he had just stolen the blessings, and his parents said to him, you need to leave. Rachel said, Rivka said, you need to leave because I know that your brother's trying to kill you over what you did. And Yitzchak says, you need to find yourself a wife. So Yaakov leaves as a single man, and he comes back some 20 years later, and he's now got 11 children and 4 wives and all of this cattle. So Esau says, what is all of this? Yaakov says, this is what I've been blessed by God. God has given me all of these blessings, all of these children, and all of these wives. Vatigash in verse 6, Vatigash Gamlea Viladel Vishtachavu. So then all of the family now comes forward to verse 6. Vatigashna Hashfachos Haina Vialdeya and Vatishtachavena. The handmaids came forward, they and their children, and they bowed down. And then verse 7, and Leah then came forward with her children, and they bowed down. And afterwards, Yosef and Rachel came forward, and they bowed it down. And we commented, there's something that's out of order here. Anyone remember from last week?
Joseph was first.
Correct. In both of these verses, as we described the bowing down process, first the mother bows down, and then she's followed by her children after her. The maidservants go and bow down, and then their children, the 6 children of the maidservants, and then 5 children of the maidservants, and then 4 children of the maidservants. And then Leah comes forward, and then her 6 children bow down. And then Yosef comes forward and bows down, followed by his mother. So we noted that last week, and we were not the first ones to note that. Guess who else noted that? That's right, Rashi does. In verse 7 on the bottom of page 374, Rashi comments, Nigash Yosef to Rachel. Joseph and then Rachel came forward, but Kulan with all of them, the mothers would come forward before the sons. But with Rachel, Yosef went forward ahead of her. Omar, he said to himself, how did this happen? Because Yosef took that initiative upon himself and said, Imi yifas to'ar, my mother is of beautiful appearance, crossing over to the other side of the page. That evil one, Esav, may set his eyes upon her. I will therefore stand opposite her and block him from looking at her. So Yosef took it upon himself, and this is again a theme that we have seen elsewhere. Where else did we see this? Anyone remember? We saw Yaakov hid his daughter Dina. So how does Yosef end up standing before Rachel? Because Yosef took it upon himself and said, I need to protect my mother, who's a beautiful woman, from Esav seeing her. And Mikan, Rashi concludes, from here, as a result of this incident, Zocha Yosef Lebirchas Ale Ayin. Yosef became worthy of the blessing over the eye, that he was going to have this blessing was going to be fulfilled when Yosef gets brought down to Egypt. The Torah describes that the women would climb the walls to be able to gaze upon Yosef and gave him the blessing of Olei Ayin, because Yosef was the one who took the initiative to protect his mother from the eye of Esav, that he shouldn't want to marry her. She was already a married woman. She was married to Yaakov here, and therefore Yosef is blessed with the blessings, exactly whatever that means, over the eye, as a result of that. Okay, moving on. Verse 8. Esav now says, who are all of this? Who is all of this camp that I have met to you? And Yaakov responds, to gain favor in my Lord's eyes. Rashi comments, mi lecha kol hamachane? Who is all this camp that I met to you? Meaning, Rashi comments, who is all of this camp that I met, which is yours? As if to say, why do you need it? What purpose does all of this camp, meaning, if you remember this, with the gifts that Yaakov had sent, he had sent hundreds of animals to Esav, and Yaakov responds, in order to find favor in your eyes. Okay, Rashi now says as follows. The simple meaning of the verse is that it is referring to those who brought the tribute, as we just mentioned, meaning that Esav is saying, like, what is all of this gift that you sent me? And Yaakov says, to find favor in your eyes. That's the simple meaning of the verse. However, there's a medrash that Esav asked, who is all of this? And Rashi explains as follows. The medrash interpretation is as follows. Esav, as he was approaching Yaakov, encountered groups of angels. And these angels would push him and his men and say to them, whose are you? So that the angels would take the initiative and the offensive and start pushing around Esav and his men and say, who are you guys? They would say, Shall Esav's, we are Esav's men, we're his army of 400. The Haim Omrim, the angels would say, Haku, Haku, start to hit them, they're Esav's people, attack, attack. The Elu Omrim, Esav's men would then say, Hanichu, leave us alone, Beno Shal Yitzchaku, he's the son of Yitzchak. Meaning the Medrash is expressing in which the men of Esav understood what they were dealing with was a supernatural being. So they said, we're Esav's men. And the angels could care less, and they said, you know, attack him. So they said, all right, well, Esav's merit clearly is not going to stand on its own, but he's the son of a Yitzchak. So they said, leave him alone, he's the son of Yitzchak. Lo hayu mashkichen olav, they pay no attention to that, and they continue to attack him. So they said, Ben Beno Shel Avraham Hu. He's a grandson of Avraham. Lo hayu mashkich. They pay no attention to that either. Then they said, Achiv Shel Yaakov Hu. He's the brother of Yaakov. And upon hearing that, Omrim Lahem, the angel said, Im Kain, if that's the case, Mishelonu Atem, then you're one of us. And you're one of us. So the Medrash picks up when Esav, in effect, asks, who are all of these? What he was asking about were the angels that are attacking us. And Yaakov, because of the angel, so the Medrash is picking up that what had taken place is along the way, the angels were attacking Esav and his men, and they could do nothing to free themselves from the attack other than claim allegiance to Yaakov himself. So when they claimed allegiance to Yaakov, then they said, oh, he's one of ours. He's on our team. And that's the reference that the sages see in the dialogue here. Who is all this camp that I have met? The camp was not the people who brought the gifts, but the camp was a reference to the angels that came and met them along the way. In any case, Yaakov responds and says, all of these gifts are in order to find favor in your eyes. I sent them to you. And Esav responds, Vayomer Esav in verse 9, Pasuk Tes, Yesh li rav, achi, my brother, I have plenty. Yehi v'cho asher loch, let it be to you that which is yours. And Rashi makes a very significant comment on a very simple phrase. And the simple meaning in the verse, Esav is simply saying, I have a lot already, keep it. Except that Esav used a very tricky way of saying that. He says, Yehi lecha asher loch. Let it be that which is yours, remain yours. Rashi comments in verse 9, Kan, here, hodelo al habrachos. Yaakov, Esav, excuse me, was in essence conceding to Yaakov with regards to the blessing. When he said already, I have enough, the phrase is extraneous when he says, let it be that which is yours to stay yours. So the sages see, and there are references then in which Asaph is in essence saying, you know, game over, we're done, I'm finished with this, let it be yours, that which is yours, and I hereby acknowledge that the blessings which were sold to you way back when we were still young men, coming out of the field for the bowl of lentil soup, the blessings that you now then swiped from me by dressing up as me, yet Esau concedes and says, keep them, they are yours. Yeah?
Brings to mind what Pekin Avos says about what is yours, what is mine, it's the way of Sodom.
That's right.
No.
Meaning which Esau is basically saying, I have a lot, so keep what's yours, I don't want what's yours, you don't take what's mine, and we'll just go our own separate ways. There's certainly an element. Yaakov here is trying to share, and Esau says, I'm not interested, I have plenty. Yaakov begs him to take it in verse 10, Pasuk Yud, Vayomer Yaakov, I'll know, please know, him. No matzasi chen beinach, if I have indeed found favor in your eyes, ulakachta min chasim yadi, please take this tribute from me. Ki al kein ra'isi panecha, kir os p'nei elokim atir tzeini. So here we have that very difficult verse. How does Yaakov beg Esau to take it? He says, please take it. I have found favor in your eyes. Take this tribute, because seeing your face, which is like seeing the face of the divine being, and you have been appeased by me. Let us take a look at some comments that Rashi has on this very difficult verse. Yeah, any questions, comments before we can see it? Okay, so Rashi begins in the bottom of the previous page. Al na, please do not speak to me this way. Flipping to the top of page 376, if you're following along. So if I haven't lost you yet, then you're doing great. 376, the top of the Rashi. If I have now found favor in your eyes and accept my tribute from me, and as much as I've seen your face, ki kedai, for it is worthwhile and proper of you that you should accept my tribute. Why? Inasmuch as I have seen your face, and it is as estimable to me as seeing the face of an angel. For I have seen your ministering angel. So when we raised this, we raised a bunch of questions on this, right? When we just went through the verses last week, like, what does that mean? Like, seeing your face is a face? So the first thing that we jump to, which is the first thing that Rashi jumps to, is what was the most previous verses right before what we started to read today? Was the battle that Yaakov had with the man, which Rashi already told us who was the man. The man was indeed the ministering angel representing the nation of Esav. So it would make sense that immediately following those verses that Yaakov will now say something along the lines of, upon first seeing Esav for the first time in 20 years, and he says, seeing your face is like seeing the face of a divine being, would be a reference to the fact that I just battled with your angel. I was victorious against your angel. I was wounded, but at the end of the day when dawn broke, I was the one holding the upper hand. And now I would say to you, please accept my gift. Seeing your face is like seeing the face of the divine, which I have actually just done. That's Rashi's first approach, which again, what we would have also sort of intuited, giving everything that we had seen until that point. Rashi then continues, V'od, now speaking on behalf of Yaakov, furthermore it befits you to accept my offering, Al Shinitzrat Seisali, because you have consented to forgive my misconduct. Meaning, we had two parts to this phrase. Seeing your face was like seeing the face of an angel, and you've been appeased by me. So like, wait, what's he referring to? So Rashi connects this also to the most previous verse. What did Rashi see a hint to when Esav said the words, let it be that which is yours, stay with you? So the previous Rashi that we just saw, Rashi understood that to me in a reference to, I acknowledge and admit that the blessings are yours. So Rashi then puts that together with this phrase, when Yaakov then says, no, please take my gift, seeing your face is like seeing the face of the divine, and you've been appeased by me, is a reference to, I just battled with your angel, and you were appeased by me on the acknowledgement of the blessings. Continues Rashi, and why did Yaakov mention that he saw this angel? So that Esau should be afraid of him and say, he has seen angels and been saved. From now on, I cannot prevail over him. And then Rashi adds that there is one other subtle message, and maybe not so subtle, that Yaakov wanted to convey to Esau. you know, when we speak to people, we often do that. We're saying one thing, but we say it in a way that lets them know, like, oh, you look so tired today. Yeah, you know, I was so busy working on, you know, my plans for my vacation to Hawaii that I'm just exhausted. So I just sort of like throw that in as to why I was up last night, because I want you to know that I'm traveling to Hawaii, because I want you to know that I'm the kind of person who does that. So Yaakov says, no, please accept my gift. I feel like I just saw your angel. Why does he say that? So Rashi points out, there's a message there. There's a message of, I just battled your angel, and I'm still here to talk about it. I got this little limp, but I'm here to talk about it. And I want you to know that I took on his angel, and I can take on you. So just accept my gift, let's call it a day, you be appeased, and we'll move in our separate directions. So Rashi sees within that little line that Yaakov drops of seeing your face is like seeing the face of an angel, was a reference to the fact that I indeed have just seen your angel, and I want you to know that. I want you to know that we did battle, and I want you to know that I emerged victorious and was saved from it. So that Esav should say, forget it, if he could beat my angel, then I'm just going to let him go his own separate way and not start up with him anymore. Rashi then continues on that phrase which we began discussing about here, saying that you have been appeased by me. This means that you have been reconciled to me. And he brings other places where we find that, which we are not going to focus on here. It's just bringing other proofs for the grammatical element of that word. Okay, next. Going back to the verses on top. Verse 11, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Kach noaz birchasi asher hu veis loch. Please accept my homage which is brought to you. Ki chanani elokim v'chiyeshli ko. Inasmuch as God has been gracious to me, and inasmuch as I have everything, and he urged him, and he accepted. Okay, we raised a couple of problems. Let's see, Rashi is going to address some of them. What were some of the questions? We said when you compare verse 10 to verse 11, there are a number of differences which literally jump off the page. What were some of those? Let's just go over them. Yes, no, anything? Remember, what do we call the gift? What is it? What does the verse describe the gift in verse 10 and verse 11?
Well, we had minchas.
Correct. In verse 10, it was called a tribute. And in verse 11, it's called a bracha. So in the sheets we used yesterday, it used the word tribute for both, or gift for both. But they're different words. First, the Torah uses the word mincha, and then it switches to the word bracha. We also switched from that which I have sent to you to that which you have, you know, accept the tribute from me, is the verse 10. And verse 11 says, take the gift which has been sent to you. And then, of course, Yaakov uses the language of, I have everything. Not just that I have much, I have everything. Let's take a look at Rashi. Let's go to verse 11. Birchasi, accept my bracha, accept my homage. This refers to my tribute, the mincha. This tribute, Rashi says, habal re'iyas panim leprachim, which comes from seeing another person's face from time to time. It comes as salutations, as a greeting. We see each other every once in a while, and as we see each other on occasion, I send you these salutations, so to speak, in the form of a gift as we greet each other. Any form of the word bracha, whenever you find that word bracha in the Torah, shehilu re'iyas panim, which is used with reference to seeing another's face or meeting someone. Vayivarech Yaakov is Paro. He brings examples, and Yaakov blessed Paro. Asuiti bracha, pay homage to me, which was said by Sancheirev. And he brings various references where the word bracha is a specific type of a gift which is sent as a salutation to somebody who you haven't seen in a while. Why do I ask you to take this bracha from me? Because it was brought to you. Rashi comments in the top of page 377. It was brought to you, lo tarachta, but you did not trouble over it. I exerted myself to have it reach its destination until it arrived at your hand. So I'm saying, you didn't even do anything for this. I took it upon myself, all of the burden of gathering it, of sending it, and making sure that it actually arrives then at the destination. So please accept it from me, because Hashem has been gracious to me. Again, Rashi just talks about some grammar here, which we will not discuss right now. And yesh li kol, I have everything. Says Rashi, that is, kol sipuki, all that I require. But Esau spoke the Lashon Gava. Esau spoke with a haughty language. Yesh li rav, I have plenty, which implies Yoser v'yoser mikadei tzorchi, much more than I have need of. Rashi, Esav says, I have plenty, I have a lot. And the Yaakov says, I have everything that I need. There is nothing more that I need than that exactly which I have, as opposed to I have just plenty. I mentioned, I don't know if any of you were there Shabbos morning at the Chumashir. I don't think so. So let me mention it here because it fits very well with what Yaakov's language. Last week's Parsha, which was Parsha's Truma, so the Rashi comments in the beginning of the Parsha that there were actually three separate donations which were made to the Mishkan. As the Jews are now traveling through the desert and they're building the tabernacle, so there's a call for goods. And the one that's actually described in last week's Parsha was a donation of actual materials. If you have gold, if you have silver, copper, skins, leathers, wood, spices, there were all sorts of items that the actual tabernacle needed. And the call went out, if you have them, bring them. How much should you bring? Kol nediv libo. Anyway, whatever you want, whatever your heart motivates you to bring, that's what you should come and that's what you should bring. So Rashi comments, even though that's what the Torah is describing in the verses in front of us, there were actually two other donations that were required, and they were both half shekel requirements, so that the Jewish people gave a half shekel twice, and then they gave whatever they wanted from their own goods, the gold, the silver, the copper, and the other materials. And the Maral, which is what we had studied in the morning shiur, explained that the reason for that is because the contributions to the tabernacle were an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. Because the Jewish people took place in the sin of the golden calf, there needed to be an atonement for that, which was the building of the Mishkan. The tabernacle, the building and construction, was going to atone. And as the Maral explains, a person has three components to himself or herself. And with each three of those components, the Jews sinned at the sin of the golden calf. There's one component they have, which is their body. Physical, they actually do things and actions. And there's a second component, which is what we would call the mind or the soul, which a person can sin with his mindset. And those two don't always go together. For example, if a person does something accidentally, so they've done something wrong. Whatever one of the precepts of the Torah that they weren't allowed to do, they violated. They didn't realize it. They ate a hamburger, they thought it was kosher meat, it turns out it wasn't kosher meat. So they sinned with their body, but not with their mind. They didn't intend to do it. They weren't saying, I don't believe in the system. They weren't saying, I don't believe in God. They weren't saying, I'm rebelling. They weren't doing any of those things. Their body sinned without their mind. You can have instances in which a person sins with his mind without his body. Person can sin in a room, heaven forbid, and say, I don't believe that there's a God. So they sinned with their mind, with their belief system, with their soul, and not with their body at all. And you can sin with both. You could have a certain mindset, and when your body does certain things, you can put the two together. Those are two components, the mind-body component. Says the mother, there's a third component of the human being, and that's his resources, his stuff. He has things. It's not intrinsic to who he is, but it's outside of who he is, but he has them. And the Jewish people at the sin of the golden calf sinned with that also, because they contributed all of their gold and the silver to the building of the golden calf, and then they danced around it and offered sacrifices. So says Moral, they sinned with their soul, with their mind, by saying, this is a god. They sinned with their bodies by dancing and offering sacrifices. And they sinned with their resources by contributing all the gold to make it. And therefore, they needed to atone for all three. The body and the soul, everybody's the same. Everybody has the body, everybody has the soul. All right, this one is 6'2", this one's 5'6", not so different. Body is basically exactly the same for all of us. Same basic features, same basic organs. Soul, same basic soul for all of us. And therefore, everybody gave a half a shekel for each. What did the half shekels go for? What did we use with the half shekel? So one went for the adonim, which were the sockets at the bottom of the base of the tabernacle. The sockets had two cavities in them, and each one of the walls had two pegs, and they would put the pegs into the sockets. So those sockets were purchased with the funds of the half a shekel. That, says the Maral, was to atone for the body. Because just like a socket is a physical thing that holds up the entire structure, it's just the lowest base but from that base it provides that which everything above it will need. So too, our body is simply a base for the real structure of who we are, which is our soul. So the half shekel that everybody gave, which was the same equal half shekel for everybody, because everybody has a body, was to atone for their bodily involvement in the sin of the golden calf, and it went to purchase that which represents the body, that which is on the bottom of the totem pole, but supports everything, and that's our body, which supports our soul, and is, so to speak, on the bottom of the totem pole as far as importance goes. We need to take care of it, but it's just our body. It just houses our soul. Our soul is really what we're here to serve, to give life to, and to allow it to do what it needs to do. That's the Adon. The other half shekel went to purchase animals for the public sacrifices, the morning sacrifice, the afternoon sacrifice, and that's obviously to atone for the soul element. And then the contributions that were given were to atone for the fact that the Jewish people were involved in contributing their own gold for the sin of the golden calf. In the course of this discussion, the Maral asks the question, but since the money was given, how much did you have to give of your gold and silver and copper and skins and oils and spices?
As much as you wanted.
So the Maral asks, that doesn't make sense. Why shouldn't it have been that everybody gives, let's say, I don't know, 10%, so that the wealthy have to atone for more, and the poor, but everyone's giving a percentage. This isn't a percentage. This might end up with wealthy people giving very little, and poorer people actually giving more. Why was it based on how much they wanted to give, and not on how much they could actually afford? So Maral says, because you have to understand how we define wealth. And he says a brilliant comment with which we'll conclude for today. There's a mission in Pirkei Avos which we're familiar with, and he has a beautiful understanding of it. Who is considered rich, the Mishnah asks?
He's happy with what he has.
So I've always struggled with that, in terms of, am I fulfilling that or not? What does it look like to be happy with what you have? So there's sometimes positive ways to define things and negative ways to define things. So I could define being happy with what I have in a negative way, meaning I don't want something else. I don't want more. I'm not jealous of him. What would it look like in a positive? Like, I am happy. What does it look? Is there a way that would express itself other than that I don't want more than what I have? So Maral says yes.
Question.
Besides for not wanting more, there's an actual positive. And it has a very brilliant insight. You know what it looks like? The ability to give. The more a person gives from what he has, the more we can say he's happy with what he has. Because a person who has trouble giving is in effect saying, right, I need more. I can't give this away. I need it. Says the Maral, when you see in yourself the ability to give of your resources to someone else, you are happy with what you have. When you find it hard to part with it, it's because really you want more. And when you want more, it's hard to give away what you have, because I still need more. And commensurate exactly with your ability to give is your wealth. Says the Maral, so Hashem says, whatever you want to give me, you give me. And the rich people will give me a lot, and the poor people will give me a little. But the rich, I don't care if you're rich because you have a lot of stuff. I only want a lot of things from rich people who are rich because they feel like they have everything and they'll give a lot. That's the kind of wealth that I want to get from. And people who are poor and are not willing to give, so I don't want from them anyway. So let them give whatever they're able to give is their wealth. And in this way, everybody will give their wealth. Whether it's a lot or a little, it is their wealth, because wealth is not a financial number. It's how are you comfortable with what it is that you have. The more you're comfortable with it, the more you'll be able to give. In any case, so that's what you have. You see, Yaakov's language: I have everything that I need. Yesh li kol, everything that I can possibly need, I already have. And therefore, he says, please take it. Take all of these things. I'm giving you all of these gifts. Please go ahead and take them. Okay, we'll continue Mirtz Hashem next week with then the back half of the dialogue of Let's Travel Together, and we will continue with that Rashi, and then move Mirtz Hashem to the Ramban. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.